Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, Susan from Fresno.
Well, if you didn't know, my name's Susan and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank you for inviting me. I've had to stay sober for about 6 weeks now because I knew I was coming. Really messes up your drinking, you know. I do want to welcome the newcomers, anyone who's fairly new, anyone who's thinking about being new. This is a great place to be if you want to stop drinking. But it's not, for me, it hasn't been just about not drinking. And I am going to share a little bit about that with you. My sobriety date is April 1st, 2007. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor. And I found that all of that is very essential to my staying sober one day at a time. We have, I think most of you are familiar with the circle and a triangle. It's called our three legacies. And at the bottom is recovery, which is my personal recovery. On one side is unity, and the other one is service. And as I share tonight, I think you're going to see how important I've found in the last 8 years that all three of those things are essential for me to stay sober on a daily basis. As far as my personal recovery, April 1st, 2007 was not my first sobriety date. I originally came into Alcoholics Anonymous December 23rd, 1989. I had left the problem, which was him. Of course, about a year later and working some steps, I realized, oh, maybe it wasn't all him. But I found myself, after being separated for 6 months, you know, and I wasn't going to be having these horrendous hangovers and blackouts and things like that because he was gone. December, I think it was 22nd, I guess. Anyway, I had decided the night before I was going out to dinner with friends, and I was only going to have two glasses of wine because I had to be at work the next day. And as I'm coming to, sick as a dog, one more time, I'm looking in the mirror and he's not there. Actually, the only person there was me, which is really kind of unusual in those days, but anyway. I had to admit that maybe I did have a little bit of a problem. The only person I knew at that time that had had a problem was my little brother, who I guess I was 31, so he was about 28. He'd been through a recovery program, and I was a very supportive sister, I want you to know. I went to all the family nights, and I had my couple of glasses of wine, went to family night, then went home and got it on. You know, it was, but I was there for him, because he had a problem. Anyway, I called him, and I was raised very religiously. And called my brother, and I said, do you think, because I knew he'd been to AA a couple of times, I said, do you think you could take me to an AA meeting? He said, oh, Susan, AA is not for you. We're going to get you into a recovery program, get you back to church, and you'll be fine. I'm like, okie doke, because I don't know any different. So I go into a recovery program. I go, and I go to sign up, and in this contract that I have to sign, the guy tells me I can't drink for 6 months. And I have to go to three AA meetings a week. And I tried to explain to him that I didn't need AA. You know, you can call my brother. Too bad. Too bad, you're going. And I did. And I managed to stay sober for 11 and a half years. So what happened, you're asking? What happened? Well, I told you I got rid of the him, and then I found me a bunch of more hymns. God was in there somewhere. I did find a higher power. Actually, you became my higher power in the beginning. I remember this woman, I was only a couple months sober, and she was going over the 12 steps, and there was all that God in there. And coming from this religious background, they'd already kicked me out, and God didn't want nothing to do with me. So I remember going up to her in tears, and I said, you know, I do really want to stay sober. I said, but it's just not going to work for me, that God stuff. The famous words, you don't understand. And she said, honey, don't worry about it. Look at that step two. It says a higher power. She said, find you an AA group. Not a person, but a group that you're comfortable with. Make that your higher power. See what happens. And it did happen. And eventually I came to an understanding of my own God, or higher power, if you will. Anyway, so, and then I met him, who, I was 6 months sober, and he was 11 years sober. You know, I'm not going to do the 13th step thing here, because he really saved my life. This man was big into service, and I just followed him around like a puppy dog. And we stayed together for about 11 years, and no, not quite that long, 9 years. And that didn't work. Anyway, so I want you to know that throughout this 11 and a half years, I was into service. I would chair meetings. God forgive me, I sponsored. I'm serious about this. I pray about those women, because I didn't know what I was doing. I picked my sponsor because she liked to shop, you know? It was like, oh, I like her, you know. But to be honest, she really didn't know anything about the steps. So I was just staying sober by hanging out with you guys, you know, for 11 and a half years. I won't say that my life got better. There was a lot of spiritual experiences and awakenings that happened during that time. It wasn't for nothing. But I found another him, and we moved to a new city, and big city that I didn't want to be in. And I had been going to meetings, I'd been in service up until that time, and when we got there, I said, you know, I'm doing good. I've been sober 11 and a half years. I can handle this. I need to set up house. I need to find a job, and then I'll find an AA group. 6 months later, I was drunk. And I used to be the beer and wine drinker. I want you to know, when they say this is a progressive disease, they are not kidding. Because I immediately started drinking the hard stuff. And I didn't water it down. I was about getting drunk. That was all it was for me. I spent the next 6 years doing geographic. I even got sober for 1 year. I didn't drink for 1 year. Let's put it that way. I did a geographic back to Colorado where my daughter was. She was going to fix me. God bless her. And it didn't work. And so I ended up in a recovery home. And the beautiful thing about Colorado is that they have brother and sister homes. So I was in the girl home, and he was in the boy home, and we hooked up, and once again, 6 months later, I am drunk, and I got to tell you, I did things, they talk about yet, I did things that I never imagined I would do. At the end of that, if you want to call it a relationship, the bottom line was that I escaped with my life. He was a very sick man. And my son, they put him in jail, and my son flew me back to Fresno. I stayed with him and his wife and my granddaughter, who at the time was about 3 years old. And you would think, wouldn't you, that if you've hit this place of just horrible demoralization, and it was, and me at 49 years old, living with my son, I'd worked all my life. I'd always taken care of myself. It was like, it was a little embarrassing, you know? You would think that that would be a bottom for me. But I got to tell you, I could not stop drinking. There was my son, just, he was so disgusted with me, and I, you know, of course. And my daughter wanted nothing more to do with me. I have three children. Okay, I'm going to give it away now. My oldest is 40. My middle son is 39. And my daughter is 37. So we're talking about adult people that have children of their own. And they just were done with me. So bottom line was, son wanted me to get a job, did that, got a temp job, and he wanted me to go to meetings. He wanted me to do something. It had to change. It was so bad that they would not leave my three-year-old granddaughter in a room alone with me. Now, if you want to talk about incomprehensible demoralization, that's what it was for me. So I started going to meetings, but I'm drinking. I remember one meeting, there was one down the street from my kids, and I had a pint in my back pocket, and I sat through the whole meeting. I drank before I went in, and I drank on my way home. And then ended up getting a little POF car. I loved that car. Her name was Sadie. And started going to what used to be my home group, Reality. It was my home group before I had gone to all these other places. And I was really afraid to walk in there because of my shame of that I wasn't sober anymore, you know, and what are they going to say? And there was one couple there, she was Al-Anon, and he was AA, and they were my mom and pop, and I hadn't seen him in 6 years. And I remember walking through that door, and there he was, and I thought, okay, here it comes. And he looked at me, and he said, I wondered where you were. And it was like, at that moment, I knew, I didn't know how, but I knew it was going to be okay. You know, they say if you don't remember your last drunk, you're probably not done. I pray that's not true. Because I don't remember when I took my last drink. It was sometime in the last couple of weeks of March, I guess, of that year. And it was one of those moments of, you stop and you go, I haven't drank. I don't remember the last time I took a drink. Because I was going to meetings three times a day, as well as working full time. I was desperate. I wanted to stay sober, and I knew that if I didn't stop drinking, I was going to die. I will tell you that there were times in those 6 years I wanted to die. I tried to die, but it didn't work. Evidently, that higher power I talked about had something else in mind. It was probably that I was supposed to come talk to you tonight, so who knows what's going to happen after this. But anyway, so I picked April Fool's Day. I thought it was appropriate. And I have managed to stay sober one day at a time. But it isn't just by going to meetings. It has been by working the 12 steps. And I'm briefly going to try and go over that with you. Of course, in step one, pretty simple, right? I am powerless over alcohol. I don't spend a lot of time on my drunkalogs because the bottom line is I just, once I put alcohol in my system, I no longer make choices for my life. Alcohol does. And they are never, ever good ones. Ever. So I know I'm powerless over alcohol. That's pretty clear. In step two, you know, you come to believe that there's a power greater. And I already shared with you that in the beginning it was AA. And it still is. You know, sometimes I don't know who to thank more, God for AA or AA for God. Because those times when I'm a little, I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel separated from my higher power. And I know it's me doing it. I know it's me doing it. But sometimes I feel separated. And that's when I know I need to get closer to you. Because I truly believe that God speaks to me through you. So, and then we talk about turning our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. It was explained to me that will means the way I think, and my life is the action I take because of the way I think. What I discovered was I think negative. You know, I always think the worst. Fear, shame, guilt, remorse. I mean, it was just my constant companion, especially fear. I have come to understand by doing inventory that fear has been the basis of every decision I've ever made in my life. It was my motivation. And so I had to change the way I think. There's a little story, and I know some of you heard it, probably most of you, but it kind of sends it home to me about how important the way I think is. And there was this Indian grandfather and his 5-year-old grandson. And the grandfather says to his grandson, he said, "We all have two wolves inside of us that are constantly fighting. They are constantly at battle. One is a bad wolf. He is the guilt, fear, anger, shame, all those negative feelings. And then there is the good wolf who is compassionate and kind and loving and caring." And the little boy looked at his grandfather and he said, "Well, which one wins?" And the grandfather said, "Whoever you feed." And I began to realize that what I put in here is what I'm going to get here. And it kind of started changing things. I started trying to be more positive, but by reading more positive, and that's when we'll get into 11 and stuff like that. But first I had to clean out that negative, and that was what my 4-step and 5th step were about. It was taking that inventory to find out what really makes me tick, you know, and that was where I discovered the fear. That was my basic flaw. But there was also a lot of pride and some jealousy in there and things like that. And a lot of things, what I found, you know, sometimes we think that this is, this 4-step is this list of dirty, ugly laundry that we got to get out. And it's not. It's just the facts. It's the facts about me. Some of my character defects that I've already talked about were my survival skills. My pride kept me sober the first year because I was going to show that SOB I could stay sober. But that won't keep me sober. And sharing with a sponsor, with someone else, what was really interesting, the things that I thought were just horrible and that I could never tell anybody were like, yeah, okay, Uh-huh. And then I talked about, I know this surprised you, but all the men. And she was like, I'm more concerned about this. I said, but they were adults, you know. Just like, shouldn't that be okay? She said, why? And we started looking at some things, and the fears started popping up. And anyway, so it's really important, step five, it's important to share all that with somebody else. Because once, I don't know about you, but if I don't get it out of here, it just grows and grows and grows. There's a place in the, I think it's in the 12 by 12, that talks about we are only as sick as our secrets. And in step 11, it talks about in the 12 by 12, that if there is something at the end of the day, when we're looking back, if there is something that we should have shared with somebody else, better do it now. Do it now. Get rid of it. I just don't have room for it anymore. And with that came, of course, 6 and 7, all my defects of character. It's too long a list to go over. And the realization that all those things are never, ever going to go away. We practice this program. You know, we'll never get it perfect. We just practice. And those defects, they sneak up from time to time, like daily. Anyway. And then we go to 8 and 9. So what's 8 and 9 about? 8 and 9 is really cleaning it up. Now I've looked at what my faults are. Now I know what I have done to others. And now it's my chance to fix that. You know, it's really, I know we're all frightened. We all get frightened about this one. I was. But I tell the women I work with this. Once you do step 9, and an 8, of course, is a list. Let me say this. I did a 2 and a 9. It didn't work. You need to go through it with your sponsor or someone that you trust and go over what you think your amends should be. And but once done, there is a freedom that I just cannot, if you haven't been there, I can't wait till you get there. Because I can walk into any room today and not be afraid that so-and-so is going to be there. I wonder what they're saying. I bet they're telling them what I did. Oh, my God. I got to get out of here. I don't have to do that today because I cleaned up my side of the street. There's still a couple on there that I haven't found or whatever, but that's what step 8 was when it said I'm willing. And when the time comes, God will provide. He'll put them there. And that's kind of what I want to hit on right now is and God does. He does for us what we can't do for ourselves. That oldest boy that I was living with, I made amends to him. I made direct amends to him. And he just looked at me. And I finished, and I thought I did a really good job. And I said, is there something you want to say? And he said, nope. Because he'd heard it before. Over and over and over again. With that son, and with everyone actually, it has become a living amends. He had to see me walk it. When I was first living with them and I was going to all these meetings, my daughter-in-law and son, they were a little put out. They said, you like those people better than you like us, you know? And I'm like, well, I need to stay sober. And that's where I can stay sober. Today, I can be over there for Thanksgiving dinner and I get a call and I say, oh, somebody needs a ride to a meeting. Go, we got the dishes, go, you know? It's like, yeah. Because they've seen what you've done in my life. And I will tell you to this the point. This was just a couple of Valentine's days years ago. My son invited me over to have Valentine's pizza with family. He had just started on a spiritual walk of his own. And so I was asking him, you know, about what he was doing and what he was trying to achieve, those kind of things. So he's talking to me, and he said, one of the things that we had to do, Mom, is talk about people in our past. And he talked about his grandmother a little bit, and then he looked at me, and he said, and then there was you. And I'm like, oh, here it comes. Here it comes. But, you know, I was anxious for that, you know, for us to, for him to express himself, you know. And he just stared at me. He just kept looking at me. And I said, son, it's okay. I said, I'm okay. I'm in a good space. You can tell me whatever you need to tell me. And this 38-year-old man started crying. And he said, no, Mom, you don't understand. He said, I am so proud of you. I never knew I wanted to hear my son say he was proud of me. I always thought I wanted to hear him say they loved me, I was doing good. But when he said those words, I said, thank you, God, and thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I had made the living amends. He saw the change in me. My daughter, who I won't even go into, the things that I put her through, because to be honest with you, I don't remember it. I was in a blackout. For many, many years, she wanted nothing to do with me. And I understood. I understood. I didn't blame her. I wouldn't want to have anything to do with me either. But I did do a letter of amends. And then due to a family crisis, if you will, she ended up having to talk to me, business, so to speak. And just eventually, everything started changing. I was able to make a direct amend. In May, I went to see my daughter graduate from college. She is now a registered nurse. And she wanted me there. She said, I don't care if anybody else comes or not, Mom. I want you there. We talk all the time. We have a relationship today. There is one more son. Because of that religion I told you about, we've been separated for many, many, many years, off and on. And I was kicked out, so he's not supposed to talk to me. I wrote him a letter of amends, too. And I actually heard through the grapevine one day that he got the letter and he was thinking about calling me. And I thought, well, I'll call him. I'll fix this. You know, this is my old MO. I'll do this. Fortunately, I had been practicing making phone calls, so I made a phone call before I called him. And I left it alone. About 3 years ago, my oldest son said, Mom, when's the last time you had the oil changed in the car? Little Sadie. No, it wasn't Sadie. It was seven. Anyway, I said, I know, son. I just hate cars. And he goes, you need to get it done. Now go do it tomorrow. I said, all right, I'll go to Walmart and I'll sit there when they open, so hopefully I won't have to miss any work. So I get there at 7, and I'm sitting there, and I'm waiting, 10 after, 15 after. They still haven't opened, and I'm getting really irritated. And I'm just about getting ready to leave, and I look up, and there's this hostess truck coming towards me. And my middle son at that time drove for hostess. And I'm like, whoa, no. Couldn't be. Will he even speak to me? So I'm watching. We hadn't seen each other probably 8 years. So I don't even know if he knew I wore glasses. He certainly didn't know what kind of car I drove. Anyway, so he comes, and sure enough, it's him. And I just kind of did a... He passes me, slams on the brakes, reverses. He's jumping out of his truck. I'm jumping out of my car. He's hugging me, and he's telling me, I have missed you so much, Mom. We stood there for an hour. We talked. I made direct amends. And we parted knowing that we love each other. Now, I have not seen that son since because of the separation. But it's okay. Because God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And He gave me that. He gave me peace. Talk a little bit about, and I'm running out of time. I want you to know my roommate and my dog are really glad I'm up here talking. They're so sick of hearing me. Anyway, one of the things about unity, we're talking about the three, is for me, unity means the fellowship. That means you and me. You and I, Ty. Unity. And one of the problems, or one of the things I didn't do my first time around was pick up that phone. I'd go to events, you know, and I'd go to meetings, but I didn't know how to pick up the phone. So this time around, for years, I called two people a day. Nothing had to be wrong. I even told some people, you probably get a message on your answering machine, just delete it. But the bottom line was, I was practicing. I was practicing for when that moment came. And at 1.5 years, that moment came. And instead of, and I guarantee you, I should have been at the liquor store. When I came out of that emotional blackout, I was on the phone with another member. So unity for me, yes, it's meetings, it's staying in touch, it's being around people that are on the same path that I am. The other thing is service. And I know, why don't we use the word volunteer? My sponsor, and I'm very blessed to have the sponsor I have, he actually started out as my service sponsor. Did you know there is such a thing as a service sponsor? I didn't know. I do now. But anyway, what was I saying? Service sponsor. Just back a little bit. Help me. Thank you. That's it. He told me, volunteer is something that you generally want to do. It's something you got an interest in, right? You know, I like painting, so I'm going to go down and help the kids down at the daycare paint. Service is doing something that maybe we don't want to do. Do I like picking up the phone at 10 o'clock? Do I like being on teleservice every Saturday? Not always. But I will tell you that when I make the commitment and I follow through on those services, I am so blessed. One of the greatest services, of course, is sponsoring. Every time I sit down with a woman and we are in the books, and we were talking about God, and we were talking about AA, I learn from them. Sometimes they remind me of where I was and where I can go. Because I've had first-hand experience. Part of service for me today, yes, it's about me staying sober. It helps me to stay sober, if you want to selfishly, yeah. But the other thing, too, is that son I just told you about. He is one of us. Today's his birthday, so he's really been on my mind today. And I just pray. I pray that he finds these doors. But in the meantime, it's my job to make sure they stay open. And not just for my son. It could be my grandkids. It could be either one of my other kids. It could be my neighbor. It could be somebody I work with. It could be my dog. No, he doesn't drink. But the bottom line is that I have that responsibility today. Alcoholics Anonymous belongs to me. Alcoholics Anonymous belongs to each and every one of you. And without getting too technical, you know, in New York, where the main office is, they take direction from us. That's why you have a GSR. general service representative. They come to the group and they say they're talking about changing the big book. They want to change the 11th tradition. How do you feel about that? And your GSR goes to the district and he says, this is how our group feels about that. And then the district goes to the area and they tell the area and the delegate, somebody that we vote in to go back and talk to New York once a year. Alcoholics Anonymous belongs to you. And you can make it whatever you want to make it. It's that simple. And once I took on that, once I made it mine, because that's what happened the last time. Alcoholics Anonymous was not mine. It was yours, and I came to your meetings, and I helped you out, you know. But now it's mine. And now I have a responsibility. There, years ago, 1955, when they were setting up the General Service Conference, there was a non-alcoholic chairperson, and he did this beautiful speech, but there was this, just this little part in there where he said, why do we need a conference? Why does Alcoholics Anonymous need a conference? Why do we need to be in service? It's for that drunk who is stumbling in the dark over there in the alley. It is for that baby that's going to be born tonight that is destined for alcoholism. It is for me. It is for you. It is for my son. So today, I am big in service, a little over the top. Believe it or not, I don't have a hymn. I can do all kinds of stuff. Well, yeah, I do, Reggie. He's 8 pounds, really hairy, little terrier. He's my guy. But I am blessed in that sense. I used to hate it when I read in the 12x12 when it said that if you're having relationship problems or you're feeling lonely, get into service. I was like, I just want a relationship. That's all. Why do I have to get into service? And I got to tell you, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. So when we talk about service, what kind of service is there? It is greeting me at the door. It is recording. It is pouring coffee or getting water or cleaning up. It is sponsoring another person. What is sponsoring? It is just sharing your own experience, strength, and hope with another alcoholic. The women I sponsor, I can't keep them sober. I guarantee you, if I could do that, I would wave my magic wand right now, and we'd never have to come back there. But I don't have that power. I don't even have the power to keep me sober. I depend on a power greater than myself. So, and now we're talking about the last three steps. You know, in 10, I'm constantly taking inventory on a daily basis. Sometimes it's when, and you know what I'm talking about. You get that gut feeling, you go, oops, maybe I shouldn't have said that. So I make amends. Or I don't do it again. Or whatever. My 10th step for me, this is just for me, at the end of the day, I ask myself three questions. Susan, did you hurt anybody today? And I take a look. If I did, what do you do to make it right? Did I help anybody today? That's a big one. Did I open that door for that old lady that had all those grocery bags? I'm not talking that you have to go save the world. Did I do anything to help? And did I do God's will? It's pretty simple. Prayer and meditation has become essential. That is my, if you can, that is my favorite step. Praying is talking to God. Meditation is listening. And I do it all the time. Do it all the time. Just talk. It's called having a relationship. That's it. And what do we do in relationships? We talk and we listen. So how do I hear him? I don't hear the voices. No, not anymore. What I hear, sometimes I hear him from you. A lot of times I hear him from you. Maybe I'll hear him in something I'm reading. It might be in a song. might be something I'm watching on TV. My job is to be aware, is to pay attention. Where is he? Where is he? And I got to tell you, he's all over the place. And then in 12, it's that giving it away. We have to give it away in order to keep it. At least that's been my experience. So, in closing, what I would like to say to you, tell you about this little lady. Her name was Marge. When I first came in 89, went to this breakfast meeting, she was always there. She had 500 million thousand years. I didn't know that, of course, at the time. But she had the big bouffant hair, smoker, raspers, you know, to talk. Eight husbands she'd outlived. She was my hero, okay? But anyway, at the end of every speech or talk, share, she would say, "It matters not if I know your name. If our eyes have met, you have truly played a part in my sobriety. And for that, I am eternally grateful." Thank you.